While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Radar right here on Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and it's great to have you with me this Thursday afternoon as we get into the stories shaping our country and the wider world. Now, for the next hour and a half, I'll bring you the latest development, analysis, and perspectives on the issues that matter most to Namibians. Now, On the Radar is your trusted source for news and updates from Namibia and beyond, bringing you breaking developments, in-depth discussions, and the conversations driving our national agenda. Every day, decisions are being made that affect how we live, how we work, how we invest and grow as a nation. Now, from governance and economic developments to innovation, youth empowerment, and private sector growth, we are here to unpack what's happening and why it matters. Now, through our live broadcast and digital platforms, On the Radar keeps you connected to real-time updates in politics, in business, in technology, in health, and culture. So, wherever you're listening from this Thursday, whether from Swakopmund, from Ketmanshop, Ochuarongo, Rundu, Tsumeb, or Katimamulilo, welcome to the conversation. This right here is On the Radar, where information meets insight and where Namibia stays informed. Let's get right into these discussions. At a stakeholder engagement on the sale of shares or interest and the transfer of mineral and petroleum licenses held at the headquarters of the Namibia Revenue Agency in Windhoek, the Commissioner of the Namibia Revenue Agency, also known as NAMRA Sam Shivute, highlighted the agency's broader mandate that he said goes beyond revenue collection. He emphasized the role in facilitating trade and improving efficiency within the Namibia's customs environment. Now, addressing stakeholders, Shivute noted that over the past 4 years, the Revenue Authority has introduced several initiatives aimed at streamlining trade processes and supporting compliant businesses. Among these initiatives is the Authorized Economic Operator, also known as the AEO program, a customs accreditation system designed to recognize companies that demonstrate strong compliance with customs and trade regulations. Now, according to Shivute, only 10 companies so far in Namibia are currently registered as authorized economic operators, a figure he said the agency hopes will grow as more businesses become aware of the program's advantages. Now, companies accredited under the AEO, or also known as the Authorized Economic Operator Program, benefit from benefits such as the reduced customs interventions at border posts, including also fewer inspections and stoppages of goods at a border post, which helps speed up the movement of cargo across Namibia's borders. Now, in addition to that, accredited operators may receive exempted value or expedited value-added tax processes, which include the possibility of operating for up to 3 years without routine customs audit, provided they maintain compliance standards. Now, these measures are intended to reward trustworthy traders while allowing customs authorities to focus inspections on higher risk shipments. Now, Shivute also stressed that the Namibia Revenue Agency undertakes several activities that go beyond traditional tax collection, and this include trade facilitation measures such as pre-clearance of goods, which allows cargo documentation to be processed before shipments arrive at border posts or ports of entry, helping thus to reduce delays and improve supply chain efficiency. Now, the engagement session formed part of ongoing efforts by the Revenue Agency to consult with stakeholders in the mining and petroleum sectors, particularly regarding regulatory processes related to the transfer of licenses and ownership interests, while also strengthening compliance and transparency within the sector. This article is sent to the Commissioner Sam Shivute.
Joseph spoke about our vision of aspiring to become a world-class revenue agency. Part of our legal mandate, we have a responsibility to enhance trade facilitation. Last week, when we met as border agency to endorse the coordinated border management framework, someone in the meeting said, "Namra, you only focus on revenue collection." And when I got my opportunity to say something, I was quick to point out that, well, maybe that is the case, but it's not 100% true that our focus is only on revenue collection, because we have a responsibility to enhance trade facilitation. That's why any goods to be imported or exported in this country, it have to be declared and cleared, and if there's duty to be paid with NAMRA. But it's not only that. When one look at a number of initiatives that have been introduced over the past 4 years, I'll start with authorized economic operators, where we want to see more Namibian-owned company participating as authorized economic operators. We only have 10. And imagine when you become an authorized economic operator, whereby when you are importing, your things do not get stopped at the borders. When there is a VAT due to you, it gets expedited. When you can go even up to 3 years without being subjected to an audit. And my wish is to see Namibian companies getting that accreditation, because it's not difficult. If other companies are getting it and we already have 10, I don't understand why are the Namibians not coming forward, especially those who import, to make sure that you get this authorized economic trader in the country. And you, with that benefit, you can operate in Eswatini, Lesotho, Botswana, in South Africa without subjected to many custom inspection and audit. That is one of the programs that we have introduced. You may have heard about one-stop border post, the pre-clearance, things to be pre-cleared before it comes into the country. I'm just sharing with this so that one can see that there is a lot that we are doing that have nothing to do with revenue collection, but it's aimed at making the environment, making to contribute to make Namibia more competitive. It's for that reason that we also have this gathering to share some of this critical information. So we want to enhance trade facilitation. I want to commend those who have decided to invest in Namibia, be it foreigners or Namibians, because with your investment, our economy will be in a better position to grow, and Namibia will be able to achieve prosperity. Without trade, trade is the engine of any economic growth, and therefore we want to commend you for that decision, whether you are foreign investor or a Namibian, because that is the way we can grow this economy. So we want to commend you on that. But we also have a responsibility to ensure that Namibia remain competitive, and that's why for investor confidence, predictability, those are very critical. I want you to know what is expected of you from a tax administration perspective. That's why we also have a service, a free service rendered by our legal department called the issuance of tax luring. If there is anything that you are not clear about or how a tax treatment will be done, you can write to us and you can get a tax luring, which is binding. It's only the higher court that can turn it away. But some people, and here is where my colleague in the auditing firms, sometimes they will not like me for saying this. You have a choice. You can go to an accounting firm and pay, or you can come and get it straight from us without paying, because our services are for free. And therefore, I just want to encourage that part of our responsibility, we have a responsibility to educate and share information. We have a responsibility to improve service delivery. Is our service where it's supposed to be? Definitely not. I'm facing people, some of them here, who are not happy with some of our service, and I'm happy that at least we know that there are those who are not happy, and that's why we have to work on those pain points and improve. But we have a responsibility to improve service delivery. I want also to bring to our attention In Namibia, the only state-owned enterprise that I know that is required by law to improve service delivery is NAMRA. Meaning that if we are not giving you the service that you want, we can even be taken on legally. It's in the law. Improve service delivery. No any other institution in this country where you will find that clause that say improve service delivery. And that commitment is there to improve that service delivery. Now, coming to why are we here today? You may be aware that Namibia have the self-assessment system as part of our taxation system. You may also be aware that 2011 and 2015, our Income Tax Act have this amendment to ensure that the disposals of shares and interest. First, 2011 was with regard to the mining sector, that when you have that right or that interest or share, and there is a transaction that is happening, they have to be declared and a tax have to be paid on that. Then 2015, it applied to, that is what was applied by the Q, paragraph Q under the Income Tax Act, Section 1 of gross definition. Then 2015, the one that cover petroleum license kicked in. Now, I want to commend the industry. You've been there, Ms. Weston, as well. The industry was consulted very properly before the introduction of this law. Because what had happened before that, we had cases where shares and interest were disposed worth millions of dollars. And some here, we're not talking about millions of dollar Namibian dollars. We're talking about worth U.S. millions of dollars. And the government of Namibia and the people of Namibia got zero from such transaction. I know of one that have cost more than 15 billion. And that imagine a transaction happening in a country for the resource of the country, more than 15 billion, and our government got zero. And that's why I have to commend the lawmaker who ensured that that law is changed. And I also want to commend the industry, because the industry was also saying that, no, this is right, because this is what is happening in all other countries. So I'm then saying that because this law came into effect 2011 and 2015 respectively, and I'm very happy that we are here, and the provision and the implication and the treatment will be explained by the expert as they will come on. What we want to encourage, if you forget everything that I have said, the one thing that you must remember is that we are calling for voluntary compliance. We want to build a NAMRA that is there to provide service and to work with a Namibian investor and Namibian business people, taxpayer, and so on. But voluntary compliance is what we want to encourage. Why do we want to encourage voluntary compliance? We have moved into a stage now where we are strengthening our compliance mechanism. We are working with the like of African Development Bank to develop the capacity of our auditors. Even last week, we're busy with that. Working with IMF to develop the capacity of our auditors. African Tax Administration is working with our colleague at Transfer Pricing. And it's through that strengthening of mechanism that we were even able to pick up one transaction that is more than $100 million. But now, because of this capacity, tax have to be paid on that, I'm just saying. And there are many of that, because from the data that we are having now, we're talking about maybe 250 licenses that have been traded during that period of about 10 years. And the compliance rate, as we are seeing, it's only 5% compliance rate. And the law is in place. That's why I say, no. Let's engage the stakeholders so that we tell them the truth, so that as the compliance mechanism is strengthened, what I do not like, there was one day someone I know come to say, well, I always argue and advise people, when you owe the state through taxes, make a payment arrangement and ensure that it's effective. And if you are not able to honor it that specific month, come to the office and tell the official, not the commissioner. The commissioner don't get involved or sneer, and say, no, this month I could not honor it because of A, B, C, D. And therefore, but instead of, if you just stay away or you try to play big, what sometimes can be very painful is when a person comes and says, no, they take my 30 million. And it's happening. I say, man, I just wish voluntary compliance and just making sure that if you have a challenge, you have communicated, could be better. Because getting the money sometimes, there is a struggle. We are calling for working together, understanding that which you do not understand. Even we can even offer to come and discuss with your financial and your tax official and explain everything so that people know. And we need to do so that people know what is expected and so on, so that you do not find yourself in a situation whereby you have already disposed those share and the interest. You have made your millions, and maybe you have even already spent those millions and so on. And now the tax administrator come looking for its money because it does not prescribe. It does not prescribe. So I then wanted to conclude to say that voluntary compliance is very critical. Let's share and get a better understanding, and I'm happy that experts from the industry, they're going to talk. One of our top tax expert is going to talk, and there are many top accountant, Masaisab and so on, they are going to talk, top oil and gas lawyer, everyone is here, top business people who are in oil and gas, they are here. I want us to talk and have a collective understanding, but my humble call, voluntary compliance will help. Why? Come 31st of October 2026, the amnesty is going to come to an end. Now, you may have heard when the minister presented on the 26th of February, presented the budget, it was mentioned that the amnesty have been in place since 2017. You can do your study and your research. No country in the world have an amnesty of more than 6 years. The amnesty in Namibia have been in place since 2017. And you either have a tax administration, but you can't. And the disadvantage as a result of people not the way how it's affecting compliance. Because people are saying, why should I take my money to the state if I can put it in an investment account and so on? So no, you can do your own research. It's only in Namibia where you have an amnesty since 2017 until last year. And in Parliament, Narol Kambala, that announcement was made in Parliament. So October 2026, amnesty is coming to an end. Why I have to mention this? I'm mentioning this for people to make their proper arrangement, but because what you do not want a situation whereby the auditor then found that Ms. Magnai, my daughter, maybe you have interest, you disposed your share, you got your millions, you invested in other businesses and real estate, or you do not have the money, maybe you lost the money through whatever means. When the tax administration come looking for its money, there is no excuse. But you would want to do the right thing before the amnesty come to an end. So with that, once again, I want to welcome, even though you have already been welcomed, all of you, I want to express our heartfelt appreciation for you making time to be here, because I know some of you, you feel, I have to be there, but I'm also wasting time because I could have been making millions in US dollar. But I'm happy that you are humble enough to be here. I want to thank you for your patience, because the venue is not my perfect kind of venue. It will be the last. And this is not going to be the last time that we are engaging. Most of you are in different sectors, And we will continue engaging all different sectors. And today we just want to deal with mining.
Now let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. The stakeholder engagement will be dealing with mining this time around. And I think I get why also, because mining is quite at the hammer of the economy at this particular point in time. There's so many conversations around it, whether we how soon can we get this oil? What can Namibia do? Where is Namibia positioned at this particular point in time? There's so many discussions around that. So it's very necessary the stakeholders do come together to discuss what needs to be discussed, what policy reforms need to be done, what needs to be put on the table, perhaps also in manners whereby Namibian people can benefit, especially from the communities where the mining activity itself takes place. I've heard of communities where mining took place. Mining has been going on, and of course, this is raw material that is being exported to so many different countries out there, but then communities still no development, underdeveloped, and I think that would be very unfair, or is quite unfair for communities. Maybe such conversations include those type of discussions, and it's only very necessary, but whatsoever it is, it's good for collaboration and for stakeholders to come together, ask questions and address certain questions. And it's when such discussions are brought on the table that another company picks up on where it can prompt or can perhaps deliver services more proficiently, or perhaps enhance its skills, or perhaps lens of a project that they can undergo that will actually make the work even much more easier. So stake engagement such as this are quite very necessary. But nonetheless, let's pause right here. This is On the Radio News Analysis. We'll be back with more news. Stay tuned.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fata Fanona, Monica, Ko, Eagle FM, Onora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Namibia's annual inflation rate stood at 2.4% in February 2026. That is according to the latest consumer index, latest consumer price index and CPI bulletin released by the Namibia Statistics Agency. Now, the agency reported that the main contributors to the annual inflation rate were housing, water, electricity, gas, and other fuels, which contributed 1.2 percentage points, followed by alcoholic beverages and tobacco at 0.5 percentage points, and food and non-alcoholic beverages contributing 0.3 percentage points. Now, combined, these categories accounted for 2 percentage points of the overall 2.4 percentage inflation rate recorded during the month. Now, the highest annual inflation rates were recorded in hotels, in cafes, and restaurants at 4.8%, followed closely by housing, water and electricity, gas and other fuels at 4.7%, while health recorded a 4.0%, recreation and culture at 3.9%, furnishings and household equipment at 3.5%, and alcoholic beverages and tobacco at 3.4%. All remaining consumer divisions recorded inflation rates below 3%. Now, housing related costs remained the largest contributor to overall inflation, with the category accounting for 28.4% of the consumer basket and recording an annual inflation rate of 4.7% in February 2026. That is up from 3.7% in February 2025. Now, the increase was largely driven by higher prices in the electricity, gas and other fuels subcategory, which rose from 1.0% to 4.8%. Meanwhile, food and alcoholic beverages, which make up 16.5% of the NCPI basket, recorded a significantly lower annual inflation rate of 1.6% compared to 5.9% during the same period in 2025. Now, the slowdown was reflected in several food items, including bread, cereals, which recorded deflation of 1.5%, largely driven by declining prices for maize meal, rice, and bread. Fruit prices increased by 9.0%, though slower than the 14.3% recorded last year, while meat prices rose by 3.0%, down from 8.1% in February 2025. Inflation for vegetables also slowed to 1.7% compared to 5.7% in the previous year. Now, the transport category, which carries a 14.3% weight in the consumer basket, recorded a deflation of 1.0% compared to an inflation rate of 1.3% in February 2025. Now, the decline was mainly attributed to the operation of personal transport equipment, including a 5.6% decrease in petrol and diesel prices during the review period. Now, the non-alcoholic beverages and tobacco category, which accounts for 12.6% of the consumer basket, recorded an annual inflation rate of 3.4%, slightly lower than the 3.7% recorded in February 2025. Now, according to the statistics agency, the slower increase was driven by moderated price growth in products such as wine, brandy, and tobacco. Now, regionally, inflation trends differed across the country's three CPI zones. Zone 1, which includes regions such as Kavango East, Kavango West, Konene, Oanguena, and Oshana, recorded an annual inflation rate of 1.4%, down from 3.5% last year. Zone 2, covering the Commerce region only, recorded a 3.5% inflation, while Zone 3, which includes regions such as Taras, Erongo, and Hardap, recorded 2.5%, also reflecting a slowdown compared to 3.7% in February of 2025. Now, the Namibia Statistics Agency noted that Namibia's inflation is largely driven by housing, by food, and transport, which together account for nearly 60% of the total consumer basket, while alcoholic beverages and tobacco represent an additional 12.6%. And as a result, price changes in these major categories tend to have the largest impact on the country's overall inflation rate.
The Namibia Statistics Agency has just released its latest consumer price index bulletin, that is for the month of February 2026, whereby the headline annual inflation rate stood at 2.4% compared to 3.6% recorded in February 2025. On a monthly basis, inflation stood at 0% from 0.8% observed in the preceding month. Core inflation stood at 3.2% higher than the headline inflation rate. Looking at the zonal inflation rates, we see that Commerce region, which is zone 2, registered the highest annual inflation rate at 3.5%, followed by Zone 3, which includes Karas, Erongo, Hardap, and Omaheke at 2.5%. Now Zone 1, which is Kavango East, Kavango West, Kunene, Ohangwena, Omsati, Oshana, Oshkoto, Ochodonjupa, and Zambezi, recorded the lowest annual inflation rate at 1.4%. An analysis of average retail prices for selected products in February 2026 revealed that consumers in Zone 3 paid the highest price for beef stew per kg at $113.96, followed by Zone 1 at $108.99, while Zone 2 recorded the lowest price at $104.19. Additionally, Zone 3 paid the highest price, that is for sunflower cooking oil at 750 ml, at $34.79, followed by Zone 2 at $33.99, while Zone 1 recorded the highest price at $32.78.
With that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, hura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
In other news, an information sharing session at the government Information Sharing Center on Government Stores, a Local Manufacturers Registration Initiative, was held today to brief local producers on opportunities to participate in government procurement through the country's government stores systems. Now, the initiative forms part of a broader effort by the government to increase procurement from local manufacturers, strengthening domestic industry and reducing reliance on imported goods. Now, isn't this good news? Because this is a part of what we normally, I would want to say, preach here on Eagle FM, especially when we're talking about strengthening our local businesses and reducing imports and rather increasing exports, and also just making use. If we're not going to increase the exports soonest, or we're not going to get the in a very short period of time, let's at least ensure that we produce from our own. Let's ensure that we have local manufacturers, local produce, and we consume that. You know, that on its own will help reduce the imports, and with time, as we produce more, we'll now be able to export. Now, government stores operate as part of the state's centralized procurement and supply chain systems, which purchases commonly used goods in bulk and distributes them to ministries, to offices and agencies across the country. Through this system, government aims to standardize procurement processes, improve efficiency, and ensure better oversight of public spending. The Local Manufacturers Registration Initiative seeks to create a database of Namibian manufacturers and suppliers who can provide goods required by government institutions. Now, by registering with government stores, local manufacturers can become eligible suppliers for products ranging from office furniture and equipment to uniforms, construction materials, and other consumable used by the public institutions. Interestingly, other countries within, perhaps by local, I wanted to mean within even around SADC, some of those countries, you hear that they make their own furniture, they do their own stuff, and yeah, you. It's not always that we have to ship everything from across the borders. So even things such as pencils, such as, yeah, stationery that is used in government offices, is things that we can actually manufacture right here at home. But I believe that we're definitely getting there. We are definitely getting there. Namibia is getting there. Now, local manufacturers, the initiative also aligns with government's broader local procurement agenda, which encourages ministries and state institutions to prioritize locally produced goods where available. Now, government leaders have previously emphasized that ministries should purchase locally manufactured products first before considering importing them. As part of efforts to support domestic industries and stimulate job creation, and not only that, also as an effort to as well identify where improvement needs to be improved and that can be worked on before actually exporting them, so that we don't get the critics from outsiders and they wouldn't want to do business with us again. But rather, let's receive the criticism right here at home and then be able to rectify it and then be able to export. Now, also speaking at the GICM, one of the guests speaking at the Government Information Sharing Center spoke about the registration initiative is intended to bridge the gap between government demand and local production capacity, while also helping manufacturers understand procurement requirements such as product standards, quality compliance, packaging, and supply reliability. By improving access to government markets, the programs aim to provide stable demand for local producers, which could support business expansion and industrial development. Now, the management session further provided an opportunity to discuss on registration procedures, compliance requirements, and procurement processes. Let's now take a listen to Ms. Kemp from the Ministry of Works. Let's take a listen to Ms. Kemp as she spoke, and also Ms. Agnes Shwapala as they were speaking at the GIC event.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Firstly, We would want to inform the public that the government stores is actually a subdivision within the division centralized services, mm-hmm. which also for under the division, we also have auction services as well as stock provisioning, which also now covers government stores. The mandate of the government stores is the central acquisition, storage and distribution of standard government supplies to all offices, ministries, agencies, state-owned enterprises, local authorities, and regional councils. Mm-hmm. And we procure centrally to ensure that there is consistent and quality supplies, mm-hmm. always readily available.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey,
The taxi's empty. So much room. Oh, no. Why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the Meme with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily, with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Always readily available. And by doing so, we benefit in terms of economies of scale. Mm-hmm. So that is the government stores in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Campbell, when you say you procure centrally, what does that mean?
What it means is the government stores actually look at the demands of all OMAS, mm-hmm. and then we subsequently advertise bids, of which we award them, mm-hmm. and then we stock the supplies. So whenever office, ministry, agency, or state-owned enterprise is in need of these standard items, they will then visit the government stores, mm-hmm. and they will then procure these items from us and not procure it from outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that through auction? Or?
No. As I said, there's two subdivisions within mm-hmm. the division centralized services. We've got the stock provisioning under which the government stores falls.
Okay.
And then we've got another leg, which is the auctioning.
Okay.
But then with the auctioning, what we do at the auctioning subdivision is that we conduct auctions of obsolete, redundant, worn and damaged items. To the public on behalf of other ministries, offices, and agencies. Mm-hmm. So that is separate from the government stores per se. When it comes to auctions, we do advertise in the newspapers whenever we have an auction. These auctions are conducted throughout the country, mm-hmm. and we would advertise, and it is advertised for the public. So anyone that's interested in bidding mm-hmm. for those items on auction can then go to the auction, register themselves. There's usually a registration fee involved, mm-hmm. and then they can bid. And then the highest offer would then be awarded that bid in terms of that specific item, be it vehicles, be it equipment, be it furniture.
Government store ensure that our product is accessible to all OMAS by where we have that. We have six government store countrywide, starting in government store in Windhoek, which is a central of government store and the mm-hmm. head office of government store. Windhoek is serving three regions, which is Commerce region, Omaheke region, and the part of Hardap region. Mm-hmm. We have also a government store at Kate Mansop, which is serving Maras region and the part of Hardap region again.
Okay.
Then we have another government store at Ochivarongo. Ochivarongo is serving Ochozonjupa, Erongo, and the Kunene region. Mm-hmm. We have another government store at Ondangwa. Ondangwa is serving Omusati, mm-hmm. Oshana, Ohangwena, and Oshikoto. We have another government store at Rundu, mm-hmm. which is serving two Kavango, Kavango East and Kavango West. Mm-hmm. And the last one at Katima Muliro. The Katima Muliro is serving the whole entire Zambezi region. Mm-hmm. Then we think everybody is covered. You can go where it's nearby government store. Government store, we have a system when we are issuing our stock to our customers. Then when you come to us, like, let me say it's embassy, mm-hmm. you're given a code which is allow you to be in our system. Mm-hmm. Then since you are from the embassy, you are not from OMAS, we will buy on case sale.
Oh.
You just identify the item which you want from government store. Then we create an order for you. Mm-hmm. We print you invoice. You go and pay. Once you pay, we issue your stock.
In July 2025, mm-hmm. Cabinet issued a directive instructing all OMAS to procure from the central government stores. Mm-hmm. And also instructing the Ministry of Works, under which we reside, that the government store should procure, should prioritize local manufacturers, procuring from local manufacturers. Mm-hmm. That is in line with the agenda of Namibia's industrialization and job creation agenda of NDP6. And subsequently, the Ministry of Works, the government stores, advertised an expression of interest mm-hmm. in December last year, mm-hmm. Where companies, manufacturers were requested to come and register themselves on an eligibility list for them to be considered for preferential procurement processes. Mm-hmm. In terms of restrictive bidding. That it was done in terms of the Public Procurement Act, mm-hmm. Section 31(1)(c), and the Public Procurement Regulations, mm-hmm. Section 14(1). Mm-hmm. The main objective of this expression of interest was actually for us to create a manufacturer's database and also for us to establish what is the country's manufacturing capability.
Yes.
By doing so, we would then be able to identify those items within our catalogs, the standard items that we are supplying to OMAS, mm-hmm. that we should reserve specifically for the preferential procurement process mm-hmm. in terms of local manufacturing.
Okay.
That is basically what this expression of interest is for then.
Government stores procure plus minus 11,000 items. Mm-hmm. I will not mention them all,
okay.
But we have different of warehouses at the government store. We have, it's named by section. Section one is for cleaning material, where you find all hygiene product. Mm-hmm. It's also where we are selling toilet paper. We have also section 03 to 08, mm-hmm. where is our hardware. It's for the gardens, mm-hmm. panga, wheelbarrow, and also battery and everything you can use it in the garden. Mm-hmm. We have also 09, it's a furniture section. This section can sell furniture for the office, furniture for school like a chair, desk, table. Then we have section 12. 12 is for uniform. Mm-hmm. And we have 13 is also for household where you find broom, mop, mm-hmm. trolley, and everything you can use it. We have also section 14 for education material, mm-hmm. where you find pen, pencil, for school, whatever our kids are using at school. Mm-hmm. Then we have also section 15 is for official document and face value. Mm-hmm. Face value, we are also talking like receipt book. Receipt you get when you go to hospital, mm-hmm. is from government store.
Oh, okay.
And also receipt when you pay fine at the police or you go to for your child-based certificate, home affairs. Mm-hmm. Those are face value from government store.
As we speak, the government store currently manages 13 procurement contracts, mm-hmm. of which 9 have already been awarded prior to the directive mm-hmm. from cabinet. These contracts that were awarded, the 9, are due to expire during the 27-28 financial year. Mm-hmm. Our procurement opportunities are primarily advertised through the government e-portal, e-procurement portal, where suppliers can access bid documents and submit proposals. Mm-hmm. In urgent situations, we do request for quotations, mm-hmm. which is also issued through the same portal to speed up the procurement process. Mm-hmm. Most of our procurement process, as we speak, are restricted to small and medium enterprises, mm-hmm. our SMEs, mm-hmm. in line with government policy, except now where items may be reserved specifically for local manufacturers.
Okay.
Suppliers are therefore encouraged to always regularly monitor the e-procurement portal for new bidding opportunities. Mm-hmm. As outlined in the expression of interest, manufacturers interested to be included in the eligibility list, or we can also call it the manufacturer's database, must submit documents to the central government stores. Mm-hmm. This, it's like a proposal that you will be submitting. This should include a cover letter, company profile. What should be contained in the company profile should be information like background, history of the company, mm-hmm. The key personnel that you like, your structure.
Yes, yes.
How your operations are, mm-hmm. key personnel involved within your manufacturing plant, their qualifications, because we would want to know if you are manufacturing, let's say, cleaning material, mm-hmm. do you have the necessary skill, the necessary knowledge to ensure that your product that you are manufacturing can be utilized for human mm-hmm. utilization. Another aspect, then basically they need to submit the normal mandatory documents that is usually required in terms of bidding mm-hmm. for government. That's your copy of your affirmative action, copy of your SME registration, copy of your social security, mm-hmm. your NAMRA. In addition to that, they also need to provide us with a fitness certificate, mm-hmm. Because we'll need to go and assess if it is the truth, whether there is such a manufacturer at that premises. Mm-hmm. In the absence of a fitness certificate, a valid agreement, lease agreement mm-hmm. will also suffice. Mm-hmm. And then what they also need to do, they need to submit with the proposal and evidence of previous contracts.
Okay.
Where they will indicate what was the value thereof, who was the company that they had supplied, mm-hmm. and the duration thereof. And also attach a brochure.
Oh.
For the items that they are manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Once they've got all this information together, the proposal is prim and proper, they can then submit it at the central government stores. At this stage, with the pre-registration, there's basically no disqualification criteria. Mm-hmm. For us, it's first to look at, as I said, we want to assess the manufacturers' capability of the country. So once we've registered them, there would be a site inspection mm-hmm. to verify indeed if there is such operations as they are claiming happening at the site which they indicated. And once we've affirmed that, we will then come and they will now be informed to say you've made it mm-hmm. or you haven't made it, because we also need to know that it's not a thing of if you are on the list, you automatically. Mm-hmm. As I said, the preferential procurement will be towards local manufacturers, but these manufacturers will also now be required to bid against each other.
Yes.
But that will only be in terms of a restrictive bidding exercise, mm-hmm. Restrictive bidding. And when it comes to the restrictive bidding, they will be called, and in terms of all bidding documents, they will then be required mm-hmm. to submit this documentation, and it's only thereafter.
And Alan Sports, right here, and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned for news beyond the borders of Namibia.
Efiloshisho otali kulandula kona vewayuka. Ekwashili palekolo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHB. Watupa teleko meshwe kwashili palekolo ashfika mafio pedola emiliona omlongo da Namibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja omakwafo unamiti enashane filoshisho lopa ulumo mumbu. Kwa voveli ponje yoshilongo, shijoshi topo rwasho ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis mwule o minute disyonailela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya moruendo ponje yoshilongo. E mangono malandula fano, odo dino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about.
We engage can help in the execution of our task. Municipality cannot do everything on its own. It's very difficult. So the government comes in, we do MTEF funding requests from government. Once funds are expanded, we look at the land that are developed with the government funds. We donate. We have done quite a few. I think my colleague Linda will be screaming off the roof to say we have done 800 even about a year and a half ago. Beneficiaries have started. They are building with NHE. We have multiple government-funded projects that we donate land to our beneficiaries. So we look at that. But then there is not only low cost. We also have middle income. Okay. We have the high income segment. We have different ERVN that will be coming out in due course in a year or two that we are basically trying to get the project off the ground right now for Kramersdorf. ERVN will be available in a limited magnitude. We have another project in Matutura where we have Quintessential, a developer, private developer, producing services for the town. But some even will be available there while the developer builds for houses for beneficiaries, which is also a way of servicing basically the waiting list. We will also have Namib Oyster development close to mile 4, where ERVN will become available for the middle to high income segment. Then we also have the Ombundu project. That one will also have ERVN come through. It's only that with development partners, council is discouraging competition with its development partners. So they are then afforded a chance and a grace period of, say, 18 to 24 months after services are completed so that they can enjoy their business and recover the cost invested, because these are massive amounts. If we must quantify, normally a development of a township in terms of services, it barely is below 35 to 40 million. Funds need to be recovered. It's substantial investment, so we need to have a clear strategy. But in terms of urban delivery, we have a plan. The only issue that we don't have a control is we have a lot of activity in Swakopmund, the coast, and Namibia in general, with the emergence of oil and gas. We wouldn't say we were ready for that. It came. It is here upon us, and we need to also accommodate that growth and also, you know, change goalposts to enable that we accommodate everything that is required from staff that will come to work on the oil rigs, etc. And then, okay, we have the master waiting list from which we service our clients. Then there are instances where we advertise for participation in closed bids. Then there are special projects that we accommodate when when there are special instances, but that's bulk. But we do not accommodate private treaty sales or applications at the ad hoc level. So because it has to be orderly, at times competitive when it's not low income, and sometimes we also look at targeted interventions.
Thank you, Mr. Kreer. How are we managing the applications and the waiting lists for land allocation?
The waiting list is a very sensitive issue. We safeguard it with our lives. We look at it because we want absolute integrity in the waiting list. Whenever they are available, when they are projects, we look at the affordability of the clients, the beneficiaries. We look at the occupancy, especially in the low-cost areas. The key here is that a beneficiary that is allocated has certain predetermined costs for maintenance of an RF or a house. There must be affordability for that. So we consider length of stay, we consider your income level at least to be at the bare minimum to be acceptable. Income, residency, first-time home ownership, we are quite big on that. You need to be a first-time homeowner. And we are very serious about that. It's we don't look past it. We have instances. We have issues where we always hear that multiple allocations are done. Even when such info is available, we always urge that let us know and make corrective measures, but we try to maintain that you need to be a first-time homeowner. I would say approach the offices, find out of prospective projects that are coming up, engage, because we have an open door policy. We listen, we talk, we engage, and we also try to initiate special interventions. Therefore, it's good to get to the source without being misled out in the open and to engage real sources of data too. We are actually at present embarking on a needs analysis to accommodate first-time homeowners. I think you'll watch the space. We'll be pronouncing quite soon as to how we are going to go through with.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And now let's go for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in South Africa, as Soweto residents are demanding for electricity intervention.
Residents of Soweto have taken to the streets this Friday morning, demanding a flat rate from Eskom for their electricity consumption. They say the current rates are simply too expensive. The residents are planning to march to Eskom's offices. These are live pictures ahead of that march. Let's bring in SABC News reporter Puseletso Mokoena, who's in that area for us and joins us now live. Puseletso, get us a better sense of what exactly the residents there are asking for.
Thank you so much, Ayanda. Well, the visuals that you are seeing right now are that of the residents that are currently, I can say, they are marching because we are at the meeting point here in Deep Kloof, whereby the residents will be marching to the local Eskom offices to ask for, or I can say, to propose a flat rate fee for electricity. You would remember that this is not the first time the electricity, I mean, the residents are trying to challenge this payment of electricity. They want to stop paying for electricity using the prepaid meter and start paying using the flat rate ranging from at least 100 rand to 250 per month. They're saying that they cannot afford to pay for the prepaid, because you'd remember that the residents in this area of Deep Grove, and particularly Soweto as a whole, some of them are not working. I can say the majority of them are not working. The majority of them are grant recipients. As you can see on your visuals, they are holding placards. Some are saying, we do not afford. We are grant recipients. We need flat rates. We are unemployed. Some are saying not prepaid in Soweto. So these are just the issues that they will be raising when they will be marching to the local Eskom offices any minute from now, whereby they will be trying to challenge their payment of a prepaid meter for electricity. They want flat rate, as I've said. But I think I should just bring in one of the residents, or I can say one of the march organizers here, Abutin Kolis. Abutin Kolis, you can just come this side so that you can speak to us about some of your demands as their residents here in Soweto. Thank you so much for joining us. We are here, and you are, this is the march for to challenge the payment of prepaid electricity. You want flat rate. Let's talk about, because you'd remember, I remember that this is not the first time as the residents you're trying to challenge this type of payment. How confident are you that this time around Eskom will hear your demands?
Well, for today, we are not going to talk to Eskom about the flat rates, but we are going there to demand that Eskom stop the prepaid meter installation process until such a time that discussions with NERSA have been concluded. Because the relevant person to talk to when regarding the issue of the flat rate is the National Energy Regulator. And mind you, on the 3rd of December 2024 at Uncle Tom's Hall, Ms. Masete, who happens to be a full-time regulator at NERSA, made a commitment. After we had made the submission, she made a commitment that she's going to come and meet with the community to discuss the question of a flat rate, because we had said that we are willing to pay. However, we sent her an invite that was dated 4th December 2024, but they never responded. So we are now saying Eskom must stop this prepaid meter installation process until such a time that the conversation with NERSA has been completed, because it would be premature, at least from where we are seated, for Eskom to continue with that process whilst discussions are taking place.
And in terms of the flat rate fee, Abutin Kolisi, maybe we can talk about the figures that you as the residents are calling for, because we understand that you, some of the residents say, they are saying they cannot afford to pay the prepaid meter electricity. What are the figures? How much do you want to pay for flat rate, actually?
Initially, we had agreed that we are prepared to pay 100 bucks. This was around 2020. And in our subsequent engagements with Eskom and NERSA, Eskom started speaking about of a figure of 350, which they said reflects a low buyer status. As a community who are willing and prepared to pay for electricity, we then took that figure as the figure which is appropriate for a flat rate, which is 350. So that is where we are standing. We want to use the figure that Eskom itself has placed for low buyers as a figure for the flat rate, which would be 350.
And you know, lastly, before I let you go, we should not shy away from the fact that the socio-economic challenges that are being faced by the residents here of unemployment, poverty, and not being able to afford basic needs are some of the socio-economic issues that are being faced with to some of the residents. Some of the residents in other areas are facing the same thing. So don't you think that the residents of Soweto, as you guys are calling for the flat rate, other residents in some areas, are they not going to want the same, and this is going to maybe, you know, pose a loss to Eskom?
In fact, from where we are seated, it would be most welcome if other working class and poor communities join this struggle across the country, because...
Meanwhile, a banker weighs in on Kenya's oil deals amid Iran conflict.
Back in 2023, Kenya's government agreed to a series of fuel supply arrangements with Saudi Aramco and the national oil companies in Abu Dhabi and the Emirates. On paper, it's a straightforward deal. The three companies provide fuel to Kenya with dollar payments to be settled in 6 months. And effectively, that eases the pressure on the exchange rate between the US dollar and the Kenyan shilling. When I spoke earlier today to the group finance director at KCB Group, that's the second largest bank in the region by assets, I asked him how concerned he was about the bank's exposure, given the crisis we see now in Iran.
You know, the way G2G works, it's, you know, we give letters of credit, product comes, when it gets here, you know, we it is sold, we get the money and pay. So the issue is about supply. Yeah, if supply continues, obviously we continue doing our LCs. It's going to be costly. One, price of per barrel has gone up. Two, of course, insurance is going to go up because of just basically what's happening and cost of shipping as well. Yeah, what's happening in there. So that for me is a big concern, the impact that has on the inflation in the country. You know, the two things that push inflation in this country is fuel and food. Yeah. The rains are here. Hopefully they won't be too much and destroy the crops. So hopefully that part is sorted. But when the price of oil moves from 66 to 90, I don't know where it ended up yesterday.
It's over $100.
It's gone to 100 already.
It's over 100.
I left it at 91.
It's over 100.
Yeah. Look at that. That's $35 up per barrel in a span of what? 2 weeks.
Actually,
less than 2 weeks. So the next shipment we are getting will definitely be expensive. It will definitely have an impact on inflation here.
We've seen companies like Qatar Energy declaring force majeure. So far, Saudi Aramco hasn't declared, one of our big suppliers, hasn't declared force majeure on deliveries as far as we know. But in the event that a force majeure declaration does come through, how does that then affect KCB's exposure to G2G arrangements?
Yeah, it shouldn't really be an issue because, as I said, the issue is about supply. If you don't supply, then we're not issuing any LCs. If they supply, we will issue LCs. Yeah, so that from that framework, that doesn't worry as much because it's you know, the way letters of credit work, there's got to be, you know, something coming. What worries me is if they declare force majeure, it means we've got to look elsewhere to get fuel. And it's likely we'll go somewhere else where we don't have a G2G contract. So as a country, we'll have to pay up front. The way the oil markets, as they owe, what was it called, OTC? Yeah? OTS, yeah. The way OTS used to work back then. Now, I think we have got enough foreign exchange cover to be able to do that, but again, what does that do to the macros? Yeah, because remember, it's expensive, so you have more outflow. There's, you know, we were about to just, I think, close a deal on exporting big chunk of tea to Iran. Not sure that's going to happen now. Yeah, so that would have been an inflow that has been curtailed. So for me, I'm looking at this from a bigger picture, from a macro impact to this region.
In the event that there is an inflation spike, and to some extent there will, because, you know, fuel prices have gone up, crude oil prices rather, have gone up by at least 40-50% so far this year. That's a painful amount for clients, for economies to have to absorb. I mean, at some point, the central bank will have to essentially put a stop to the rate cutting cycle that they've been on for the last 12, 14 months.
So it depends on how long this war goes for. Yeah, the US are saying it's almost done, 6 weeks, and they move on. If it's 6 weeks, then, you know, I think the regulator will take a view on whether that inflation is a one-off and, you know, it's not expected to continue. If the war goes longer, then absolutely, inflation will hit. There's the bands that the regulator has, 2.5 to 7.5. Goes beyond that, they have to take a call.
And now on Nigeria's positions oil sector amid Iran conflict.
The ongoing instability in the Middle East is creating an oil vacuum, one that is being felt across fuel pumps from the United States to Asia. Hundreds of oil carrying vessels remain anchored in the Persian Gulf as the U.S.-Israeli conflict with Iran intensifies, choking one of the world's most vital maritime passages. For the global economy, the crisis is once again underscoring just how concentrated and vulnerable global oil supply remains. But across the Gulf of Guinea, Nigeria is now actively advocating for West African crude grades as a reliable alternative, urging global partners to diversify away from concentrated Middle East supplies.
It could work either way. It could make them want to work with countries like Nigeria that is rich in gas and oil, like I said, to diversify market share for the benefit of both countries, or they could hold back. And but if they hold back, then what would they do? Where would they invest? Are they going to hedge all their bets internally, given what they've experienced? So I hope not.
Since President Bola Tinubu took office in 2023, Nigeria has pursued sweeping reforms in its oil sector, long plagued by chronic underinvestment, widespread theft, and frequent pipeline vandalism. According to Tugar, the country's total oil output has now climbed to about 1.7 million barrels per day, up from 1.4 million at the start of the administration. The minister adds that Nigeria stands ready to significantly boost production even further, provided new investment pours into developing untapped fields and rehabilitating aging pipelines.
It's in line with what we've always been advocating for countries that might otherwise consider us to be competitors for hydrocarbons, to partner with us, to invest so that they can diversify their market share as well, working with us.
Nigeria has long felt the pain of costlier oil as the country imports large volumes of refined products despite being a major crude producer. It still experiences short-term price shocks from those imported fuels.
For the region, I think it will be more of a problem, because, of course, not every country produces oil. But, you know, I have to say also that a lot of the petroleum products that Nigeria imports ends up in neighboring countries. So we tend to shoulder the effects, the shock.
But the tide is turning for Nigeria with the opening of the privately owned Dangote refinery. The complex is now operating at its full nameplate capacity of 650,000 barrels per day, enough to satisfy domestic needs, according to officials. They add the ambition for Nigeria is to now double output and start supplying exports soon. Najma Abdulrazak, CGTN.
Shanghai's Eastern Hub opens a landmark global business exhibition.
From international touchdown to the exhibition floor is now a seamless reality in Shanghai, thanks to the full operation of the first phase of a new business zone. With 48-hour advance registration, overseas visitors need only a valid invitation and a passport for visa-free entry and a 30-day stay. A dedicated 20-minute shuttle from Pudong Airport takes them directly to the Zoom.
Oh, it was really good. It was amazing. And I think it's very convenient.
This is a totally new experience to me. I've never seen this kind of special zone. I've never seen it before. This special area, then, good for business opportunity for Shanghai.
These visitors are coming for the Appliance and Electronics World Expo, or AWE. This year's expo features a 30,000 square meter space inside the zoo, alongside the Ming City area, bringing together 1,200 consumer electronics enterprises from home and abroad.
My flight is like in 4 hours from now, but I decided to still come here because I have to see what's new here. I feel like many of the innovations are still only in China, you know. They are not yet expanded to the whole world.
The benefits of the new business zone extend beyond visa-free access.
For foreigners who need to leave the zone and enter downtown Shanghai for visits or business exchanges, they can complete the registration procedure in advance at the immigration service window within the zone. Upon entry into downtown, they are eligible to use the fast-track channel, saving up waiting times.
What's more, a new AI and biometrics-driven drive-through inspection has been launched for cargo vehicles to ease the cross-border transfer of exhibition materials. Faster and easier, Shanghai is fostering greater international economic and trade engagement by pursuing higher-level opening up. Biren, CGTN.
Meanwhile, four people have been killed after the U.S. refueling plane crashed into Iraq.
U.S. and Iraq people were confirmed dead. They are continuing to investigate the incident, but they have said that the loss of aircraft was not due to hostile fire or friendly fire. We shall bring you more details on that as we get them. As we approach 2 weeks since the U.S. and Israel first struck Iran, killing the country's supreme leader and sparking a conflict spanning across the Middle East, there seems to be no let-up. So where are we in this conflict, and are the aims of the U.S. any clearer? Let's talk now to our chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette. Good to always see you, Lise. You've covered wars and conflicts for many years. You've seen civilian suffering firsthand. Can you tell us a little bit about the actual cost of human life here and what this war is doing to the children of this region?
I think, Nomia, there's been a growing concern that even the language about this war has been very dehumanizing. The way that the U.S. Defense Secretary, or as he calls himself, the Secretary of War, Peter Hegseth, talks about death and destruction every day. They talk about when they go after an Iranian tanker, they could have bombed it, but they sunk it because it's more fun to sink a tanker. And you get this sense of that it's almost a war game. And even in war, words matter. And of course, our colleagues, Tom Bateman and the State Department and other journalists, continue to press American officials, including President Trump, to give clearer answers about what happened on the very first day of the war, the same morning that the salvos were targeting the compound of the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, and other security chiefs. They also, according to BBC Verify, a U.S. Tomahawk missile hit a base, military base in southern Iran, which was very close to a school. And Iran says that in that school and in the surrounding area, 168 people were killed and more than 110 children. And the United States just continues to say that they're investigating. And every day someone else is commenting that this should be taken seriously, that even in war, there are rules. And there are reports, too, that in all of the other countries in the region, most importantly in Lebanon, which is described as the Southern Front, children's charities are expressing concern about the impact on children there, as children are on the run again, hundreds of thousands displaced, not going to school. Infrastructure is being targeted. Infrastructure is being targeted, too, in Iran, which means that the lives of everyone is affected, including the most innocent of all, and that is the children.
Yeah. Lise, you were in Iran recently, and there is a distinction that Iranians do make, isn't there, between Persian people and the Islamic public. I wonder about your assessment in terms of the impact this war is having on people. Is it blurring that line? Is it sharpening it? Is there going to be a rally around the flag type of effect? What's your assessment of that?
Iran, of course, is a vast country, three times the size of Iraq, more than 92 million people. The population is predominantly Persian, more than 50%, but there are also very large minorities, including the Kurds in the West and the Arabs, significant Arab population too, along the Iraqi border, the Azeris. And it was in the Kurdish area where our...
Now with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radio News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkon Nandadingi program brought to you by Matthias Hangara. And of course, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut comes in at 16:30. Thereafter, the Business Economic segment with David Chombe from 1800 Hours. From Indafa, happy as usual. It is goodbye. I'll see you again next time.